You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 99. The last show was the third in a sub-series I've been doing about staple crops and industries in Louisiana. We visited with Kevin Pito from Coast Roast Coffee. And while coffee isn't grown in New Orleans, the city has a long history with it. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. Today's episode is about Dillard University. Located in the Gentilly neighborhood of New Orleans, Dillard University is a historically black university. As you'll hear, Dillard has a rich history and continues that legacy today. I grew up close to Dillard, but I really didn't know much about it. I decided to fix that by visiting the campus. Before I take you along for that visit, though, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors, Two Chicks Walking Tours. If you love New Orleans, you probably wandered the Garden District. It's beautiful, but it really comes to life when you have a guide who can tell you about the history and about the people who live there. On a Two Chicks Walking Tour, you learn about the architecture, the residents, and a whole lot more. You get to see where Anne Rice lived, where Saints favorite Archie Manning still lives, and you might even run into actor John Goodman. And a side note, Goodman purchased the home he lives in from Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. And Sandra Bullock owns a house just two blocks away. Two Chicks keeps their tour group small and offers a more intimate experience than most. You'll have time to ask your questions, and you'll walk away really getting an insider's perspective of the Garden District. Two Chicks also offers tours of St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 and the Ladies of the Night Tour that I talk about often on the show. Whatever you choose, know you're going to be in great hands and you'll have a wonderful time. Use code BEYOND and save 15% over at twochickswalkingtours.com. If you haven't been on a Two Chicks tour yet, be sure to add it to your list. All right, let's jump into today's discussion and learn all about Dillard University. Our discussion today is going to be about Dillard University in the heart of New Orleans. Dillard's a historically black university that was founded in 1930. I hope I have that right.
35 it opened.
35. Mm-hmm. But it has roots going back to the 1860s.
Yes, sir.
It's a vibrant place for learning and developing leaders. But there's so much that I don't know about Dillard, even though I grew up very close to here, that I thought I would come and you, the listener, could come along with me as we learn about Dillard. I have three guests with me today. I have John Kennedy, who is the university archivist.
Yes, sir.
I have Robert Mitchell Jr., not senior, that's his dad, the university registrar.
Yes.
And I have Ms. Adrienne Anderson, the director of alumni relations. Right. So thanks the three of you for being here with me this afternoon.
It's a great pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, sir.
It's a hot but gorgeous Friday afternoon here in Gentilly. So we were talking about that and talking, gosh, you know, we're recording this in September, but we are nowhere near the end of summer.
No.
So first off, I want to talk about, people listening to the show might not have heard the term HBCU, so historically black college and university. So can we talk about what that is and why that's so important?
Well, HBCUs offer a space where African-Americans can come and invest in scholarship in a free environment, and free by mean not judged specifically on the case that this is an African-American that holds these ideals, and they're free to challenge themselves amongst their peers scholastically and not have to worry about the color of their skin.
And what a world it would be if that was true universally, right, at every part of our world. But even today, I think that it's fair to say there's a lot of challenges with that. But and so Dillard was founded on that principle, right?
Right.
As were most of, if not all of the HBCU schools. How many are there still?
It's 100.
101.
I was just about to say 101.
Dillard has this long, proud tradition here, not only as part of that sort of collective, but here in New Orleans. So we are sitting in Gentilly.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, what, a mile, 2 miles from the lake, a couple mm-hmm. miles from the French Quarter, but really in the heart of this city that we all call home. Let's talk about the founding. So how did Dillard come to be? Who wants to jump in?
I'll take it.
John, well, as the archivist, you're...
Well, Dillard is the result of a merger between two other HBCUs, roughly about the same size. That would be New Orleans University and Street College. Both were roughly around the same size, and they were serving the same student base. Mm-hmm. So they decided, you know, let's do each other a favor, and let's bring this thing together. So the merger was official in 1930, the charter, that is.
Okay.
And the very first component, actually, to open of Dillard University was Flint Goodrich Hospital, which originally was attached to New Orleans University. It had a prominent medical program.
Mm-hmm.
And Dillard opened its doors here in 1935, but it's special because Dillard is a marvel, not specifically just out of the need of African Americans, or it was a bunch of people as well as the community of New Orleans to come together to make sure Dillard was born. You had white philanthropists, you had African Americans, of course. And you have the community of New Orleans to make sure that this HBCU comes into existence.
Yeah, and it's not only in the heart of the city; it's a beautiful campus. You know, I always thought that growing up, and it's this little enclave that people just like don't. You know, it's a busy street out front. People don't really. It is in a beautiful spot. Side note: we're very close to a forest that people don't realize in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just gosh, right down the street. I'm pointing, like you can see it here. But it really, it had roots, like you're saying, back quite a ways, right?
Yes, sir.
Just after the Civil War-ish, right?
Yes, sir.
For that, right?
No, that's right. And also, Dillard began to prosper as soon as it opened.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of crazy. You have a small black college prospering in the middle of the Great Depression. So it's like, you know, how can this be? And also... The specific people that came together to make sure it came about is also a testament as well. Not only, like I was saying, not only you have those group of people, but you also have women, you know, playing instrumental roles as well. So we have all of these people traditionally not in positions of power, making sure this special thing comes into being.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because as I was doing my research, right, at probably the hardest time in modern history, for all those things to happen, they happen.
Mm-hmm.
Great Depression, women aren't in a position of power. The African American community is struggling with same thing. You're in New Orleans with sort of these big barons of industry, probably almost exclusively male and white,
mm-hmm.
and yet factors from all of that come together and pull this together. And as I read, you're right, from the get-go, this was a popular and prominent institution. In terms of who you educated and the impact that the university and its graduates had on New Orleans and beyond, right?
Yes, sir.
How many people, so those first years, how many people were here? How many people were enrolled in school?
The very first year? I think it was roughly about 300 people.
That's big to come right out of the gate,
right.
Not to mention all those things. Today, what is the student population? And that's a big jump, and we're going to go back and fill in. But just to give listeners some perspective, what's the population today?
So currently we are still finalizing our numbers for this current semester. However, we typically hover around 1,300 students.
Okay, yeah. And it's, again, I wish that listeners, and we'll take some pictures, I wish listeners could see the campus. It is and has always been a beautiful campus. We'll talk about Katrina later and the impact there. But from those early days, the mission, obviously, as you mentioned, was to educate and provide a place where people could challenge themselves and grow and learn without all these outside pressures. What was the focus of the actual, what were the education programs that were first offered there?
Specifically, it was meant to be a religious-based education.
Okay.
But the programming was very diverse from the get-go. Specifically, they wanted to make sure they were training young African Americans for roles they could have an immediate impact.
Hmm.
So you had roles of majors focused on teachers' roles, if that make any sense.
Yeah,
but
sure.
You also had the sciences were present as well, the arts. Dillard has always been big on the arts. Its early leadership made it a point to make sure that the arts were very well taken care of. Dillard had its own art magazine when it opened. So there was always meant to have a diverse curriculum, if you will.
Well, and Dillard has had a major impact on jazz music in New Orleans, right? Mm-hmm. And I know a very strong, you know, if you guys want to talk about that a little bit, a very strong hand in that, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. From artists in residence and Marsalis's, right. Mm-hmm. Mr. Alice Marsalis, of course, and the influence here and the what Dillard has spawned in terms of impact on the music community, you know, is just one facet of art.
Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely.
And we talk about, you know, to get you into the conversation a little bit, Adrian, in terms of alumni, some well-known and not well-known have just have a tremendous impact.
Right? Oh, absolutely. So you mentioned Ellis Marsalis. And so everyone thinks of Mr. Marsalis, who has been a wonderful, really like a founding father, right, in the community as it concerns jazz musicians. But we also have Roger Dickerson, who's a, you know, very famous composer and musician in his own right, who he was in school around the same time that Ellis Marsalis was here. So he's also an alum. And so you go from that, you know, sort of historical component to even today, you know, in more modern times, we are about to have our third alum grace the cover of Offbeat magazine next month. So a couple of months ago, Franklin Davis IV, mm-hmm. who sings with mm-hmm. Waterseed, they were on the cover. This month we have Roger Dickerson, actually, who's the son of the composer Roger Dickerson.
Okay,
everyone in the city knows him as DJ Raj Smooth.
Uh-huh. Right.
So he's currently on the cover. And then next month, we'll have Julian Gossin, who plays with Soul Rebels.
Yeah.
So, so even, you know, so we have the traditional experiences of our wonderful alums in music, and I can't forget, or I don't want to forget, Dr. Valerie Jones Francis. Mm-hmm. Okay, her. If you hear her sing opera, you'll cry. I don't care if you don't like opera. I mean, she is just amazing. She's teaching up at Nichols, but still performing. And so we definitely have a wonderful cadre of alums who are important in the music culture of New Orleans and in other places. But definitely, as John mentioned, our experiences here educationally are so diverse. We have alums who are really doing those very traditional art careers, if you will, but then also alums who are in also very traditional science paths, if you will, as well as alums who are sort of gracing the stage in other ways, in the social sciences, as well as in, you know, the health sciences and that sort of thing. So they're doing big things. I don't know if you're familiar with our Fifth Circuit Court judge, Judge Carl Stewart, who's the first African-American chief judge of that circuit, is a Dillard grad. But so is his. So one of the things that's so great about our school in particular, but I think is very common among HBCUs, is that the experience transcends generations and that our families come here as well. So with Judge Stewart, his brother also attended here, and his brother was the former general counsel of Verizon. But then his daughter came here, and she's a judge now in Shreveport. And so there's a lot of repetition in that. You'll see a lot of families coming through. I mean, just actually yesterday, a student came by my office. Her mom was in school with me. Then, you know, so it's amazing. It's amazing. And we're excited about that kind of cyclical, or rather it's like a circle of educational life, if you will.
Sure.
You know, but they're doing wonderful things all across the board. If you name a subject matter, I can say, oh yeah, we have an alum doing that. We have a producer of a major studio. You know, we have, oh goodness, most people know Garrett Morris. I think he's hilarious. Most people know Garrett Morris from, our generation.
Saturday Night Live.
From Saturday Night Live. Let me bring you back, because this current generation would know him from Two Broke Girls.
Oh.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I have to remind myself that that's not the reference today, Saturday Night Live. But,
or Jamie Foxx show.
Right, or Jamie Foxx show.
Or
right.
Martin when he plays Stan,
right.
the guy with the radio show.
Yeah.
But so, in this room, we're all good.
Right.
We all fit the bill. But so, you know, he's another example of arts and entertainment, you know, right? But we have next month coming to speak one of our alums, Dr. Ruth Simmons, who's president of Prairie View, but she was the first African-American female president of an Ivy League institution. She was president of Brown. So it doesn't matter the area. I always tell prospective students when I come into contact with them that that's a great thing about a liberal arts education. If you get here and decide to change your mind about your major, it's okay, you know, because we provide a well-rounded education. And the question is, where do you want to go? And we can help shape the experience for you to go where you want to go next, you know, for whatever your next steps will be. And our alumni simply prove that fact. Because they're not all scientists, but some of them are. You know, they're not all artists, but many of them are. So it's a wonderful thing about going here. So if you haven't been able to tell by now, I am an alum as well. And John Kennedy here, who's an archivist, is an alum. Mm-hmm. Robert is about to be honorary alum. You know, he loves Dillard a lot, and so.
But my aunt and my uncle.
Yes.
Both, my uncle both went to Dillard University, graduated from Dillard University. Yeah. And ironically, they met here at Dillard University. And so when they learned that I was working here, it opened up the floodgates, man. And so, you know, that's how I got closer with Adrian. She said, wait, is that your aunt? I'm like, yes. And so, I mean, Dillard University has always been in my family, in my roots. And growing here in New Orleans, I've always knew this institution as the gem of Gentilly. Mm-hmm. And so coming here, seeing the beautiful white buildings, and you had to be, I thought, the upshalon of upshalon to step foot on this campus. If you, growing up in New Orleans, if you went to Dillard University, you was known as, oh, you somebody.
I'll just say I visited his aunt and uncle in New Jersey, and they told me they forgive him for choosing to attend somewhere else because he came back to Dillard.
But I still went to an HBCU, yes, so it's still family.
Yeah. So there you go. I think that it's cliche, I know. We're in the middle of the city. We're in Gentilly, a neighborhood I am very biased about because I grew up in, but that takes a lot of pride. And Dillard, to me, the graduates that I've known embody that family spirit. And that's true of New Orleans in general, right? We are very proud to be New Orleanians. Yes. Don't mess with us. Never mind the fact we got sewage and water board problems. Never mind the fact, right?
Right.
We got an awful lot of good here. And that same thing comes through with Dillard as a family. And it amazes me that when you go back and read what they were trying to do when they opened it, they were successful right out of the gate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you talk about whether it's you're thinking or talking from 1935 and you're talking from today, mm-hmm. and they hit it. It was a place, it seems to me, to pursue your interests, to be safe, to be leaders, not black leaders, to be leaders in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, we could pick Adrian, we could pick any topic, and there are leaders not only in our city, but in our country and across the world that have their roots here. And that legacy, when you talk about legacy families, I was thinking about the Chase Heidel family.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? I have talked about them briefly in a couple of other episodes, particularly one about Whitney Plantation.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a legacy family that has such a large impact on New Orleans and in this whole community, has strong ties here at Dillard. And again, in Gentilly, right? We're sitting in Gentilly. This is sort of like all of a sudden now, 14 years after Katrina, people have discovered Gentilly.
Right.
Been here all along. Yeah. Right down the street is Pontchartrain Park,
yes.
One of the oldest predominantly African-American subdivisions at a time when African Americans were excluded from subdivisions.
Absolutely.
Right? Pontchartrain Park and has a rich legacy. I learned clarinet from an instructor in Pontchartrain Park. So I know about that. What is going on? So let's talk a little bit. We're recording this in September of 2019, just a week after the anniversary of Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk much about Katrina these days because we try to move on as a city. But what was the impact here? I know it, but let's share for our listeners. What was the impact on Dillard, both physically and as a community?
Oh, wow. That's
we could go down the line on this
one. Yeah. Well, I'll mention the most obvious, though I'll be clear in saying that I wasn't actually working here. Actually, Robert and I started at the same time, so neither of us. Right. Actually, and you were a student. You weren't even a student. So we weren't actually here at the time. John was actually here at the time. So I'll actually, as I'm saying it, I'll defer for a moment to him and then chime in, you know.
There was a lot of feeling. Personally, there was a lot of feeling of confusion on what happens next. You've just started your investment in this wonderful institution, and you're not sure if it's going to return or not. But then you begin to hear rumors of, my family and I, we evacuated to Atlanta, Georgia, and we begin to hear rumors that Dillard also may relocate in Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. But finally we got the word that Dillard would be relocating and operating in the Hilton Hotel downtown. So that offers some comfort to hear, okay, I could come home and I could pick up where I left off. But I think at the end of it all, it speaks to the ladies and gentlemen that were in charge of Dillard to understand how much of a priority Dillard is, not only to African-Americans, but also the city of New Orleans, and made it a priority to make sure that the school returned and so people could pick up where they left off.
There was a lot of damage here.
There was significant damage. That following semester, we actually operated the university out of the Hilton Hotel. And during that time, it was very, you know, sort of like a little laughter amidst the trauma. I came back to visit for my reunion that year, and the students were calling it the Dilton. Mm-hmm. You know, so they said, I was like, what is the Dilton? They said, the Dillard operating out of the Hilton. That's the Dilton. And it was a great partnership for us both, you know, because the city wasn't getting that many tourists, of course, coming in so soon after Katrina. But everyone lived in the Hilton, the students, the faculty, the staff. And so I said it must have been nice to have room service, right?
I heard about that. Yes, like, they have room service.
Yes, they have room service.
As college students, so.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that was a wonderful experience, I'm assuming.
It was definitely an experience to remember. Right. And also we had joint classes over there in the Trade Center. I know they're doing some work on it now.
Oh, yes. Right.
But to be able to have classes in a hotel and also a major building downtown.
Right,
it was something. Yeah. It was something. Definitely was.
For alumni at the time, it was definitely devastating to us as well to see what was happening and not be here and able to touch it or impact it in what felt like a hands on the ground kind of way. But the administration at the time took to the skies, and they were flying all over the country raising money and awareness to ensure people that the university would not only come back, but their support was critical in order to make sure that happened. At the time, I was living in New York, and so I had the fortune that when they would visit the city, of course, seeking corporate sponsorship and support, I would have a chance to meet with them as a part of the alumni chapter there. I started taking to social media, which at the time we had,
it
was very new. But we had a lot of schools, I think, at the time, but we had our own little sort of internal Dillard alumni social media. And we were, I would post whatever the new message was from the university at the time, because there were people out there, so scam artists, of course, who were capitalizing on the fact that this had been such a catastrophe, mm-hmm. But with so few outlets for information, people were saying, oh, Dillard University needs you, click here to give, and it wasn't the university.
Right.
So once I shared that with the administration, they were like, oh, no. So we sort of worked together as alumni to combat that and to help the administration raise awareness about the issues. At the time, we were definitely the most devastated campus in the city. We literally could not operate on the campus. There was, in some parts, 25 feet of standing water in certain sections. When I came back to visit, you could look up at the administration buildings and see the water lines. Mm-hmm. We had buildings burning in the catastrophe. I remember watching it on TV, and I don't know if it was a CNN or a CBS helicopter above the campus, and you could see nothing but water and a building. I remember my friends and I were posting back and forth going, what building is that? Like, we were watching it at the same time and messaging each other going, what building is that? Do you see that building in the background burning? Oh my God, I think that's Coss Hall, you know? And so, it was a very interesting, you know, a very scary experience, certainly from a student's perspective, as John has been able to discuss, but also from the experience of an alum, because you want your university to thrive and push through any challenges. You want to know that when your grandchildren and great-grandchildren come along, that your university is still here. And we as an alum, we did not know at that time. And so it was devastating for the university. We had, during that first semester, students go and attend school and other colleges and university. You know, we're explained, hey, you know, you go off and we'll take your credits when you come back, when we reopen. But the experience definitely had a significant impact, a negative impact on our enrollment numbers. Then once we returned to campus, we only had one operational dorm, you know, and so that has a significant impact because we were an institution prior to Katrina that had majority out-of-state students, you know, but having watched this catastrophe from the perspective of an out-of-state parent, I can imagine you're not very much interested in sending your child to New Orleans after something like that. So we've rebounded and recovered well. I'm, you know, thankful and grateful to our administration that brought us through that. It was definitely something that, I feel like can't be described as, that's not true. I was going to say can't be described as anything other than traumatic. But the fact of the matter is, you know, hindsight, it was something that we actually, I feel like is a triumphant tale. You know, something that, you know, if I could borrow a saying, one of our alums said, Adrian, we rose from the ashes like a phoenix, you know, and I thought that sounds so cliche, but it is so appropriate in this moment, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
100% correct. So being on the outside looking in, being from New Orleans and seeing this from where I was attending school, you know, it hit me in a different way. But then that was one of the reasons why I came back and decided to work for Dilley University, because I'm like, I want to make a difference. And I saw the good work that the administration was doing. And my predecessor, Mrs. Connie Seymour, her team did an amazing job. Nick, we call him Bubba. Dr. Hughes and her team, Dr. Toya Bourne's team. I mean, I can go on and on about the administration. They did a good job getting students back to the university. That was their main goal. So in the spring of 2006, they had dual spring semesters so that the students can graduate on time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so for a long period of time, I think maybe 6 to 8 commencements, they carry flags of all this to represent all the schools who took them in when they were graduating from Dilley University, and to say thank you for allowing our students to come to your institution and continue their degree process. What's also interesting is that we did not lose not one academic record.
Wow.
Not one academic record was destroyed at all at Dilley University. So when people people indicate that when I became the registrar and our assistant registrar, I lost my record during Katrina. But I graduated from Dilley University. And we'll pull up the records like, no, you actually stopped at this time. And matter of fact, you didn't even come to Dilley University. So I can go down a long list of funny stories about individuals who said they graduated from Dilley University. But the reality is that the administration did an amazing job. I commend them. I commend those students for standing tall for the institution, coming back. People like JFK, well, I call him JFK, but people like John, who was one of those students, said, you know what? Nah, I came to Dilley. I want to graduate from Dilley. I'm going to stay here. I want to be a part of that legacy, right? And people like the alumni who, you know, still gave and still continue to give and say, you know what? This legacy is important. And my aunt and my uncle who tells me all the time, baby, you working for my school? Now make sure you take care of my school. I just commend that administration. I thank God that we are here, years later after Katrina, and we're still thriving strong and still trying to increase our enrollment and still consider the gem of New Orleans.
Well, and as you guys were talking, it hit me, the geography of where we are, just for people that aren't from New Orleans, we are very, very close to the London Avenue Canal, mm-hmm. which is one of the canals that broke on both sides.
Correct.
And where Dillard sits is unique because you would have also gotten water from the 7th Avenue mm-hmm. Canal, mm-hmm. Which borders Metairie and New Orleans, Lakeview, people have probably heard of. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting kind of in this triangle where all that water would filter. Yeah. I know it well. Within a mile of here, I was born. My parents were both born. Our restaurant, the church where we all got baptized, mm-hmm. went to St. James Major right down the street from here.
Yeah.
So I'm well aware of that. But for me, the lasting image was this campus is always so beautiful with the stark white buildings and the gorgeous oak trees. And one of the things people don't know if they weren't here after Katrina is that when you did come back, everything below the waterline was gray. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget that. And there was no sounds of animals. There were no squirrels, no birds, right? And everything below that waterline was just colorless. Mm-hmm. And this campus, we came by it frequently because we were mucking out our restaurant nearby. And that whiteness was set against the waterline. And then as that waterline receded, you could see it. And it was so stark against these beautiful white buildings. Yeah. And it was just sort of a, you could just tell. I mean, you could just see it. Yeah. And but while Gentilly has taken a very long time to sort of come back, if you will, as you mentioned, Dillard came back pretty quickly, all things considered, especially. Yeah. But I think it gets to the point that you're making about community. Right.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
New Orleans is very strong community, and it strikes me that when you talk to a Dillard alumnus, as is true of most HBCU schools, but when you talk to a Dillard alumnus, their chest puffs out. They talk right.
They say Dillard.
Yeah. I was going to say
Dillard.
Yeah, and if you cross the right alum, who graduated at a certain time, yes, they will tell you, oh yes, I graduated from Dillard University.
You kind of know, like you kind of know the range of when the time when they graduated, how they pronounce Dillard University. Some may say Dillard, and some will say the Dillard University, some will say, "Yep, I went to DU."
Yeah.
So the DUs are the world we know. They may be more recent graduates, but the love is still the same. Mm-hmm. And to attend an event that Adrian has when she has the alums to come back for graduation, the 50th class, just to be around those individuals, if you don't get goosebumps to be around someone who graduated from Dillard University 50 years ago and how they're sitting on campus and pointing out things that used to be in this building, which were in Rosenwald Hall, that are no longer in this building, mm-hmm. how they can point out the flagpole, they can point out Kerning Hall, they can point out different things, and you're like, I didn't know that.
There's a particular tree that everyone used to, at a certain time, you weren't supposed to date technically, and they would meet at this tree.
Was it the Weeping Willow?
The Weeping Willow. And so it's not on campus anymore. But everyone, all of the alums who married one another can tell you, and others can tell you about this tree. But to the point of the surrounding community, the university, one of the things that I love about Dillard is that it has managed to not only be in this community, but to be about this community. Mm-hmm. And I think that Katrina actually really showed how much we wanted to make sure that we were also a part of this community and that we were about this community. And so one of the things that many people may not know about our university is that you're required in order to graduate to participate in community service. Right. And so, when I was a student, we do far more than what was required, but our dean of students at the time would always, repeat the quote, to whom much is given, much is required. And today that still lives on. And even though he's no longer working here, that's still sort of a reverberating mantra you might come across, not only as a student, but as an employee. And so after Katrina, the university formally started a community relations department. And that's Nick Harris's department Robert mentioned. And so he has an office that's actually off campus, that's in the community. Community organizations are able to meet there, to congregate there, and a lot of neighborhood associations meet there. He has brought a lot of services to the community. He hosts an annual housing and health fair. Right after Katrina, he did a lot of youth summits for young people. But he is, I'm saying he, but the department's whole purpose is to connect the resources in the city to the people who need them. You know, and so if you ever make it out, he has one coming up in October. If you ever make it out to one of his fairs, you will see what I'm talking about. It is amazing, you know, to see community members here attending workshops that are very valuable to them. He brings in political representatives to be accountable to their constituent groups.
Sure.
And he has provided a wealth of knowledge through this department to the community. I mean, I've learned about things that I had no other means of knowing about, you know, that were resources to people following Katrina. You know, his office helped people to understand how to get your property back up and running. And when there was the Lot Next Door program, I never heard about the program on television or anything, but his department, you know, when you go to one of his programs, they were telling you how do you get funds to help rehab your property, what offices do you need to go to do X and Y and Z. It's an amazing opportunity. And so he's been able to perform that work largely through partnerships with companies around the city, through private funding, but he ensures that the community receives the benefit. And so I love that. That was a significant change post-Katrina, but it was really a formalization of something that we were already doing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just, you know, floored by what the things that I count to be silver linings in those clouds, you know, that we call Katrina, you know, because there have been some, and it's been an amazing journey for the university. But I think it's also allowed us to tell our story about the university, to be able to say to people things that they never would have known, but now they're interested in because they're interested in New Orleans, you know. And so, you know, the city has been here 300 years. Now all of a sudden people want to know, what's happening in New Orleans, you know. Everyone I know now has been to New Orleans. And it's been a whirlwind, but I think we've been careful to try and make it an opportunity as well, you know, to educate people about our institution and what we do here. You know, though we've been doing it for years.
Over 150 years.
That's right. I think when I think about Katrina and try to think about the positive things, I think there are so many aspects of New Orleans and New Orleanians that we took for granted. And we also are a very insular city. You know, people don't leave their neighborhoods. And as I think about what you are saying about Dillard, the very foundation of Dillard was to provide a safe haven, right? A place where you could freely think and speak and grow. And when I think of Dillard and the campus, it also has these gates around it. And I am sure that was in large part, to protect the students and create a safe haven. But it also, again, as a white guy growing up in Gentilly, I actually had been here for music performances and some art things. Side note, I always think about the sculpture out there by the little fountain.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful sculpture garden in City Park. Mm-hmm. But that little sculpture garden here at Dillard has been here, well, I'm 48. It's been here at least since I was a little kid. It's always been there in a beautiful place. But those walls also sort of symbolically kept everyone in and kept everyone out. And so this idea of being a part of the community, which clearly benefits Dillard, but gets back to a foundational principle of Dillard, of engaging the community and enriching the community, I think is so wonderful. We're sitting again in an area, again, for the listeners, I know a lot because this is where I grew up. There were a lot of homeowners, but there were a lot of generational homeowners, so they didn't have insurance. Mm-hmm. And I lived in a little house not very far from here, and I remember helping neighbors, and somebody knew how to do plumbing, and somebody knew how to do sheetrock, and you'd help. But this was a real struggle. People didn't have money, and they didn't have insurance because it was their mama's 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 home. and it was a great place to live, and now it's destroyed and don't have the means and there's no infrastructure. And so what you're saying resonates so much. It's so critical to get people information and resources.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that actually is so funny because that resonates internally as well. We have a very interesting mix of students who are who come from homes where they have family members who've gone to college, and a significant number of students who might be first-generational college students as well. Not only are faculty and staff who technically it's not their job to help orient incoming students, right? We do all see it as work of the community to help students matriculate through the university to be sustained and retained at the university regardless of the backgrounds they may have come from, you know. And so even the students take on this responsibility, and we encourage them to fill in the gaps, if you will. You know, we have a mindset that we can all be better if we are all better. So it doesn't matter if John is, he is excelling in this class, but Adrian is barely getting by. You know, someone's going to say, John, are you going to help her or what? You know, teach her those study skills. So the expectation is that we're all working together for one another, because that will advance us all. You know, not any one person just shooting for the stars. We can all shoot for the stars together, you know. And I loved that about the university when I was a student here, because I was one of those students. I didn't know anything about college. You know, I was, and Robert would laugh at me because he mentioned this about someone else, and I thought, that was me. I came to Gillett with a full tuition scholarship and didn't know until I got here what room and board was. I had no idea what that was. I was like, room and board, what do you mean? Okay, oh, that cost? It's a community, you know, it's a community internally as well as in relationship with the Gentilly area. We fully expect students to rise to the occasion of being stellar scholars. That's absolutely the expectation. But we don't hold the expectation blindly. You know, where we don't consider the fact that, hey, you may have come from certain backgrounds that may not necessarily have put you on this path. You may have wound up on this path despite, you know, the circumstances that you've gone through. And so we have to prepare you for whatever the next steps are. You know, and if you're going on to graduate school, but you've never known anyone to go to college, that requires a certain kind of touch and experience and intervention on a student than for a student who this has been a part of their lifestyle, you know, all their lives. They've grown up in this environment. Sure. And so I fully believe that this is what one of the goals that our HBCUs seek to encourage among our students. I heard someone say, and this was not anyone here, a friend of mine from graduate school who teaches. And we were just having this great conversation. I was telling her, you know, so like, why have you been at Dillard so long? So we've been talking about, you know, what we do and, you know, how excited I am about how we do it. And she said, well, you know, I go in the classroom and I teach and then I go home. She goes, why? What do you mean you guys are doing all of this and da 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 da? And she goes, oh, but faculty don't do that. I said, oh, no, faculty as well, you know. And she goes, but that's not my job. My job is to teach in the classroom. I was like, yes, but here, you teach in the classroom, but we also provide, you know, I would just say that additional touch. Because
the Dillard difference.
Oh. That's right, the Dillard difference.
The Dillard difference.
One of the things people don't think about is that, you know, how can I learn in the classroom if I don't have food at home? You know, and so there's a lot of intrusive advisement that goes on around the campus because sometimes if a student's not excelling, we have to ask ourselves, why is the student not excelling? And if we can put in place the things that the student needs to, you know, to excel, then we should do that. And we want to do that. And everyone wants to do that. Here, I love the fact custodians ask you, how did you do on your test? You know, we have individuals, one of our employees in the cafeteria who just retired, she'd been in the cafeteria maybe 30 years. She was here when I was here over 20 years ago. And she said, I remember you, you know. So we have the kind of experience where scholarship is absolutely expected, but it is also phrased in context. We want you to succeed, but we want to also make sure that you have the tools that you need to succeed. And I think sometimes that is what we specialize in at small HBCUs.
Yes.
You know, looking at the bigger picture, looking at the whole student, because we want you to publish articles like any other school. You know, we want you to compete at conferences like any other school. You know, we expect you to do those things. We expect you to go on to graduate school, law school, medical school. You know, we also have systems in place in case you need a little extra something else. You know, so for example, we actually have a food pantry on our campus. Hmm. We had one, you know, before it became, now it's the rave in higher education. But we had, you know, we were doing this kind of work before.
We have the food pantry, we have a closed closet on campus. We have this thing called the Presidential Safe Fund. We just call it a safe fund. And basically, it's a fund that if a student has exhausted all their aid, then if they have a certain GPA and meet the requirements, then they can request for this additional assistance. Mm-hmm. And everyone gives to the Safe Fund. So there's employees who give to the Safe Fund. There we just had this amazing 150 gala that we had that assists with the Safe Fund. I mean, Dilley University is what, when you look at HBCU, Dilley University is the picture that you see. Because we are truly individuals at this institution who understands that, hey, you know, I was scared when I went to college. I'm a first-generation college graduate. So I understand when I see a person who comes to my office as a university registrar, if you went to college, they're like some of the most inaccessible people who you can't even get to them, right? There's always a wall. Mm-hmm. They can see me any given time. I'm on Twitter. I'm on social media. I'm at basketball games. I'm at performances.
He is definitely at the basketball game.
Okay. I'm at the volleyball games too, so I'm not going to
do the volleyball game.
I'm at anything I can be at, right? And I'm going to commit to going to more track and field. But the point I'm making is that here, you just don't sit behind a desk.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you just don't go to class. This is not an 8-to-5.
Right.
This is truly a family, and that is because we have been doing this for 150 years. All it takes you to do is talking to one alum. Mm-hmm. And understanding their story, like I can't let these people down who graduated from here in 1950.
Right.
I can't let this person who graduated in 1960, and I can't let this person who graduated back in May of 2019. I have to do whatever I have to do to keep this legacy going, because Dilley University, like I said before, we are the gem of Gentilly, and in order for us to remain that gem, we have to love what we do. If you like what you do, you won't survive here at Dilley University. Mm-hmm. If you love what you do and love giving back to this institution, you will be here forever, and you understand that these students need you. JFK was a student when I started working here. JFK worked for us now.
Listeners can't see you pointing.
I'm sorry.
Okay, so he's not talking about JFK.
I'm
he's
talking about John
Kennedy.
Me
John,
here.
He's absolutely talking about the JFK.
Right. But, I mean, as I think back on and understand that we're celebrating 150 years, everything that these two alums who are sitting to my right are saying is absolutely true. Right? And to be, thank you, Adrian, for making an unofficial alum. To be here as a son of New Orleans, not an alum, but to understand and have the same love and passion as if I were an alum is amazing, right? And to understand that 150 years that we're doing this, we won't be around for another 150 years. We are sitting at this table, but I feel confident that the administration that we have in place now, the alums that we're producing here at Dilley University, we will be around for another 150 years, right? New Orleans' birthday celebrated 300 years, and we were 150 years of those 300 years. Think about that for a moment, and we're still kicking down doors and breaking down barriers.
And that's a good segue as we head into the last segment, Robert. I'm going to pause for just a minute to hear a word from our sponsors, but we'll be right back. Hey, y'all. I want to tell you about the old Number 77 Hotel. It's a place I've recommended frequently. It's in a great location in the Warehouse District, just 3 blocks from the French Quarter. It's close to lots of great places to eat and drink, and it's near the streetcar lines, too. I love that they have a wide range of choices when it comes to rooms. Really something for everybody. They have these interior rooms for when you don't want any hint of daylight after a long night out. They also offer premium rooms and artist loft suites that are curated by local New Orleans artists. There's a ton of choices for a small hotel. Oh, and the hotel's pet-friendly, too. As if all that wasn't enough, they have an award-winning restaurant, Compare Le Pen. And besides great food, they have terrific cocktails. In fact, the bar is one of my favorite places to meet out-of-town listeners. The Old Number 77 Hotel is located at 535 Chapultepec Street. Use code BBOLD77 when you book a room and save 25%. Plus, you get a little bit of lagniappe, a little something extra, in the form of a $10 credit at Tootlaw for coffee and stuff in the morning. All right, let's get back to our discussion. And we're back, and you were just talking, Robert, before we took a quick break, about 150 years of history here. Half of the modern iteration of New Orleans, Dillard, has been a presence here. Coming back from Katrina, we talked earlier, Adrian mentioned the off-campus resources for the community, but it feels to me like, particularly in the last couple of years, you guys have had even more of a resurgence. Your current president, Chancellor, has really doubled down on that community.
Right.
So can we talk about that a little bit? You mentioned you go to sports events. I'm a track guy, so you need to fix that problem.
Oh, right, I will. Coach Gabe makes sure I will definitely be there. But
you guys are really present on social media and
absolutely.
21st century trying to engage new recruits and alumni.
So it helps when you have a president who has been here and he came in known as the hip hop press.
Right.
That was his handle, right? And so he believes in let's meet them where they are. And so he bring in different people to come to campus to have this thing called Brain Food. So we've had some very exciting guests here for Brain Food. I will start on the athletic side, right? So we have won, with the exception of this past year, we have won 3 back-to-back-to-back championships in basketball. Our female basketball, our women's basketball team have won 2 back-to-back champions, right? Championships. The pressure is on for the volleyball team, for them to win their championship. But what's interesting is that the volleyball team won the first championship after Katrina. So that was interesting, right? But then our track team has been winning championships back-to-back-to-back. And so we're now going back into that. So athletically, under the direction of Dr. Kiki Baker-Borns, they have been doing great athletically, and that has also helped with our recruitment because now you see WGNO on campus doing sports stories about Dillard. Like, wait, Dillard's on TV? Yes. And so now we're beating Xavier this every other year now. It's not with Xavier always beating us. No, we're beating Xavier, and we're going to beat Xavier again this year, right? But then you talk about the academics, right? You talk about the theater program. We have one of the oldest, most successful theater program that we know, right? You talk about the STEM program. You talk about Dr. Robert Collins and what he's doing in the urban studies program, and you always see him on television talking about the politics,
always.
Right? and so what Dr. Kimbrough says that hey, we have great people here. Right? Talk about the physics program under Dr. Darwish. We have great people here. Mm-hmm. Get out there. Talk about Diller. So he's on a pavement hitting it. We're on a pavement hitting it. And so that keeps us known in the media. That keeps us known in students because students are now seeing us, right, outside of New Orleans, Louisiana. So New Orleans knows us.
Mm-hmm.
But we won't let, hey, this is not just a small private institution. We may be small, but we have a mighty roar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So come to the university and see what it's all about.
Yeah. The president, when he came, he hit the nail on the head by saying what we already sort of knew, which is that the university has been wildly successful, honestly, for a very long time, but we had not been telling our own story very well.
Right.
And so a lot of people who knew Dillard, they knew Dillard because of the alumni,
mm-hmm.
because alumni are all over the world, and they're telling the story to people that they know about the experience they had here. But collectively as an institution, we had not been strategically, you know, publishing our story, basically, not publishing our. Let me clarify that because our faculty will.
You're going to get emails.
Our faculty. So they publish, but I'm saying we have not been putting out the information about our institution and our success stories broadly. And so in his presidency, he has challenged us all to make sure that we're doing that, to look at our individual programs and say, you know, it's great that you're doing those wonderful things, but who knows it? You yes, know, who right. knows it other than me? You right. know, and so or
with
other
the
than
blue
our
nose
students.
And the baby blue nose.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're really, you know, and I will I believe in giving credit where credit is due. Our marketing department
Absolutely.
In the last year and a
Absolutely.
Half, they have been a powerhouse using every medium known to mankind to tell the story. You know, if they got a glimmer of something wonderful happening somewhere, they would, you know, fight tooth and nail to get the word out. And so it was wildly successful, and I know that because we have alumni, again, who knew the great things about Dillard, were circling back to us and saying, my friend said that she heard about Dillard on the XYZ channel, you know, so they've been just wildly phenomenal at getting our story told. It's a story that we've known, you know, and so that we've been competitive in the market for higher education is not news. It's just that other people didn't know. You mm-hmm. know, it's not new that we have been competitive. Now, I'll say this. One of the things that struck him very strangely, our president, was after he started working at Dillard, started hearing more and more about alums who were in physics. And then an article was published by a reputable physics organization stating that Dillard University produced the second highest number of African Americans who have PhD in physics.
Yes.
And so for an institution our size, you know, because it wasn't in comparison to other HBCUs, it was period. And so, and then another organization came a couple years later saying we're basically placing the most amount of women who get PhDs in physics, you know. Mm-hmm. And so he started going, well, wait a minute. Who else knew about this physics, you know, that we were killing the game in physics, you know, right. And so after a while, he started looking at that. He said, you know, Adrian, everywhere I look, we have alum partners and judges and all of this. And I said, oh, yeah, our legal history is very long and vast, you know, very long and vast. Revious O. Ortique is the first, help me, John, the first African-American
Supreme
Court Justice. And so he graduated from Dillard. But, you know, realizing that we had that kind of talent, and he said, you know, we need to capitalize on this. And so we started our first actual intentional, I would say, pre-law advisement program.
Right.
You know, when I was in school, you went to see the professor who had a law degree, and that person helped, you know, and so after hours. And so now we actually have a pre-law advisement center, and we are placing at the top of mock trial competitions against all schools, okay, against all schools.
Not HBCUs.
Right. Last year we outpaced, Vanderbilt, Baylor, I mean, some other, yeah. So, you know, again, we've been doing wonderful things for a very long time, but just have been probably far too modest about the great things that we've been doing. So I certainly appreciate the, I would say the Kimbrough difference, I guess, in how we look at ourselves in relationship to the rest of the world, you know, and how it's important to share that news. It's important for other people to see that that we're doing great things. So,
I think it's hard when you are raised to be humble, mm-hmm. right? And then, but at the same time, you got to market yourself, right? So
right.
that other generations, future generations, will have the opportunity to enjoy the same thing you did, right? I also think that that's interesting that sometimes it takes an outsider to come in and say, mm-hmm. look at all this wonderful stuff that you're taking for granted, effectively. Right?
Yeah.
For myself, the reason I wanted to do this episode in part was, one, getting questions, but two, as I've mentioned several times, I grew up right here. I spent mm-hmm. a lot of time at that library right across the street, and I knew, and I had been on campus for things. I knew surprisingly little about this university.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it had an impact.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if I could grow up here and be that ignorant, then I need to help spread the word about all the good that does go on here.
Yeah.
And I like that several times you've mentioned, I wanted to mention HBCU because I think it's so important in the South and nationwide and gets to the legacy of a horrible time in our history, and one that we still clearly are wrestling with today. But also, I love the point that Dillard doesn't need to qualify itself as, well, within the constraints of HBCU, right? Mm-hmm. No. Within the constraints of the world.
Correct.
It produces wonderful people who make a huge difference, and it can help people who choose to come here and be a part of that, right? Absolutely. I feel like sometimes Gentile has that a little bit in New Orleans, right? We're always sort of apologizing. Wait a minute. You know, there's such, again, 150 years. The stuff after Katrina here, you know, such an anchor to this part of this community. I think what people don't realize when you're not in New Orleans is we're sitting here 14 years after Katrina. 5 years ago, you could have been in this neighborhood and you would still see a ragged blue tarp here and there. And you would still see a decade after. But this community, Dillard, is just so foundational. I cannot thank the three of you enough. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm standing between you and the kids and the weekend. But your passion for this institution and for the people that make it up is so wonderful. Thank you so much, the three of you, for being here with me.
So we want to thank you. I mean, you know, thank you for giving us this opportunity to talk about this wonderful institution. And to your listeners out there, if you have anyone who wants to come to Dillard University, please reach out to us. You can email me directly. I forgot the email.
I will get all the information.
We're going to get all the information.
And we'll put it on our website at Beyond Bourbon ST.
Thank you so much. And we'll go anywhere we need to go, but we want you here at Dillard University.
Excellent. I want to say a special thank you to... You have a friend in Dillard University, a guy named Anthony Joyner, A.J.
Yes.
Joyner.
A.J., yeah,
so,
yes.
A.J. lives in Atlanta. We'll forgive him for that because he is a New Orleanian. He's from Louisiana. He loves the Saints, so all's good there, A.J. But without Anthony, I wouldn't have made the connection to you all. So thank you to Anthony for shining the light on Dillard.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks, y'all. I hope you enjoyed that discussion. I'm thankful I got the chance to sit down with Adrian, John, and Robert and learn all about Dillard's past as well as what they're doing today. I was particularly intrigued by the discussion about how they challenge every student and faculty member to help everyone else succeed. Thanks for joining me today. We'll put links in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/99. And if you want to help this show continue to grow, become a part of it by joining the Super Crew on Patreon. You can find that at beyondbourbonst.com/Patreon.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone who loves New Orleans. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.